Okay, it's a fair bit later now. I've already said the date, although it's now the next day because it's 12:48 a.m. on the iPhone clock. I'm looking into the microphone. I don't usually do this. I usually talk like holding it to my hand, holding it with my hand to my head like a phone. But this way I was looking at the microphone because it's like you're, you know, 1920s radio announcer. I've never done this before. Here's to new experiences. Didn't do any tasks, didn't do any most, but I did talk into my phone. I'm quite stoned now. Bucket bongs, man. They're the shit. I seem to have gotten a second wind, which is good. I was thinking about... Okay, here's what I was going to talk about. Sorry. Twillin, my friend Twillin, has been thinking about what he was going to talk about, and he mentioned... And I don't know what it is. He's going to surprise me, but it's a doozy, apparently, without wanting to build it up too much. Anyway, I was thinking what I was going to talk about was what... I was going to talk about what we were talking about. Like, it's been a couple of hours. Has it been a couple of hours? I don't know. It's been a while. We're kicking back on the porch, listening to music, and talking about what were we talking about? What was I going to say we were talking about? And I had to think about it. I thought, primarily we were talking about politics, but not in the conventional sense of talking about government or, you know, the two-party system or anything in relation to that. We're talking about politics in the broader sense of the forms and movements of power, you know, which is a hugely interesting subject to me and I think to many people. But that makes it sound all wrong, like that you're talking about power. There's always, it comes down to this assumption that you're talking about the acquisition of power because this is a preoccupation of people and it's this sort of, it's this evil thing. But no, I enjoy talking and thinking about power just because it's hugely interesting and I wish to understand it and how the ways that it moves, because it seems to, in various different forms, it's just a great word. Ultimately, it's a word that's made up, but it covers a whole range of concepts that govern how the world works. And as such, it's a very interesting subject. But if you talk about it, it's better to say talking about politics, which is the study of these things, which is a legitimate subject. I think that the way it's studied in universities is extremely conservative. But again, I'm using conventional political terms. But that's what we were talking about. Anyway, and now I'm going to hand over, I think, to Twillin, who's going to talk about what he was going to talk about. It's a doozy, apparently.
Well, before I get on to my previously chosen topic, I just want to speak briefly about the thing that you've just been talking about, and that's the power acquisition of power. So yeah, power and the acquisition of power. I think power,
because I'm not particularly in some forms I'm not really particularly interested in, you're holding it upside down. Sorka did this. I accused her of it.
That's all right, that's okay.
I'm sorry, I was wrong. I was looking at the microphone. Right. Don't even know my own phone. What am I talking about? Acquisition of power, preoccupation with the acquisition of power, like in some forms of power are desirable, but it's not, the acquisition of power to me is not where it's at. It's about just understanding how this shit works. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, I'm using the wrong word here, but I'm going to run with power, just briefly, because I want to talk about the creation of power. So power is something that we can acquire, but politics, well, our earlier conversation, we were talking about, yeah, politics and the political movements, so how music can create political power, how the internet can create political power. And I think the key word is...
Sorry to interrupt again. Political power is an oxymoron. Politics is the study of power in any form. Like, political power is like saying an automatic teller machine. Like...
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. Just power then. So the internet can create power and music can create power. And people seem to get a bit hung up on it sometimes because they're worried about the acquisition of power, so the controlling of power. And these people have got a very limited view of the universe because they're under the assumption that there's a finite amount of power and that, you know, their power is going to be somehow diminished by other people creating power, which, you know, it's a comparative thing. It's my dick's bigger than yours type situation.
Pretty much.
These guys can have their big dicks and, you know, just as much money, and people can still have more power through things like the internet. It doesn't mean that those guys are diminished in any way, shape, or form, but they're threatened nonetheless. Yeah. It's a game of, it's a very subjective view of the universe, I think, when you want to stomp somebody else down so that your pile looks bigger.
Fucking fundamental principle. That shit is bullshit. No, there are ways of acquiring power and getting what you want that do not involve stamping other people down. And we see this on the personal level all the time with people in the games that they play. And you see it on much larger scale games that people play. Always this idea that we're competing in a jungle to kill each other. And it's true, you can acquire power by stamping other people. Isn't necessary.
Yeah, that's it, man, yeah. And that's the thing that gives me the shits the most. And it's something that's within all of us. And I think we all struggle with it at times, you know. We all want to have power on some level, in some way. We want to have it, And sometimes, you know, we're conditioned to think that we need to either not necessarily take it from others, but corral it away from others. Like, we need to keep it for ourselves. You can't share it around because that will diminish how much you've got. Whereas we're starting to learn, or we have been learning for a long time, but it's being very carefully illustrated in things like the internet, that if you start sharing it, it actually gets more, you know, it gets bigger.
It builds. You can build upon it.
And not just in a linear scale. Not just in a linear scale. No, it's logarithmic, you know, the whole... This whole 6 degrees of separation thing. If we're only... Like, the whole 6 degrees of separation will soon become 5, become 4, become 3, as the world becomes more and more connected through the new media, for want of a better term.
It comes at a heavy cost. You can see it as being this great mystical struggle. It comes at a heavy cost because, to a degree, it means giving up our individuality and also sacrificing ourselves. And you see there's all these issues about the death of privacy. Everything is recorded. Everything is all this information and does create, what do you know, centres of power and power struggles, which is counterproductive to the overall goal. And you can see this trying to being worked out. But it's this thing of how much of our egos and our sense of individuality do we give up to become a stronger entity, because it makes us more collective and more collective.
Yeah.
And I'd argue that we've got a fair amount of choice in the matter as well. Like, if we don't want to give up our personal information, it is possible to a fairly high degree to keep on, to hang on to that shit.
It's more profound than personal information. It's also this sense of personal identity and self. You lose yourself in the internet in all kinds of ways, because it breaks your identity up, who you are on Facebook. I have two different Facebook accounts because I don't think that either of those people are actually me. I'm a bigger entity than that, but I need at least two, you know.
Yeah.
And all of this, and it makes you question the whole idea of the construct of self. Is it real, or is it just this thing that this organism collectively has made up? I would actually, if you really want my opinion, go for option B. But we're lying to ourselves. We think we all have individual selves, and that's necessary for us. How much of it do we give up? It's not just about your information, but how much of your whole idea of yourself do you give up? Sorry, I keep interrupting
you. No, that's fine. That's a good one, though, because this is, I think I've found a point of divergence. Because the sense of self, giving up the sense of self, we do want to get rid of it, actually. I was going to dispute that, but...
Not necessarily. We couldn't give it up now. If we did that, we'd go insane.
Yeah, that's it. We still hang on to it.
These collective moments of insanity, like when, like, fucking the Third Reich. What was this? People giving up their sense of self, being completely... And going insane. All of these little... All the time, Scientology, people getting collectively into this beautiful group mindset, the Catholic Church, and going insane, losing their shit, being crazy. That's what happens sometimes when you lose your sense of self. Humanity collectively is not ready for it. But it'd be nice one day, maybe. I don't know.
No, that's good. Yeah, because that reminds me of an early argument. I was talking about the biggest lie, though. The biggest lie is that the corporations don't know what they've done, in my opinion. That's the biggest lie, that they don't actually realise the damage that they're doing to achieve their ends. I think there's people, a company is made up of people. There are people that know exactly what they're doing to come up with their own ends. And those people create companies to hide their guilt or whatever, I don't know, to make it easier to obtain that kind of power. And more often than not, they do good things, but there's certainly plenty of capacity for people to do bad things while running a company as well, all in the pursuit of profit. And it's a lie that they don't understand what they're doing.
Okay. I don't know if all of this is going to go on the blog, but it's great. Okay, corporations, another beautiful example. What's wrong with... No, you talk about people doing evil things through corporations. People don't do... Guns don't kill people, but people don't do evil things. Corporations, which are entities that are entirely independent, basically, they do what their shareholders tell them to do, to a degree influenced by what their directors want them to do. That's what they do. Nobody in particular does this. You know, a zillion people own this company. It isn't any one person. It's a corporation. It's got no individual... the point is it does have an individual identity. It's an entity in its own... So nobody, no one individual person has to be responsible for it.
Yeah, it's an excuse.
And as such, it can do these horrendous things that no person would do. You know, like running sweatshops in the third world, forcing 5-year-old children at gunpoint to make fucking shoes. Because nobody's responsible for it. It does exactly what it does. We didn't do... Did you do that? No, I didn't do that either. Yeah. Because, why? Because there's no sense of self behind it. We attach this value of the sense of... But it is an identity. It's a thing, just like you're a thing. Yep. Just like the internet. We're talking about the internet's like a great big brain. Same concept. A corporation's a great big brain that does what it does, like a person, exactly like a person, except There's no person attached to it.
Well, does that mean that a corporation is a another attempt at unification of people? They're all coming together for a greater goal. And their greater goal in this case is to... Yeah, it's a form of unification. Like, you know, they're all setting themselves in the same mindset. They can accept these things.
They all live in the same collective universe and they're all together fighting for the common goal, which is larger than them. It's just a shame it's such a shitty common goal.
Well, I'm almost out. So I'm going to end on a brief...
Because I keep interrupting. You had a doozy. You were going to talk about what's...
Yeah, the doozy. It's not that... It's going to... We're going to end with a whimper rather than a bang.
I'm sorry.
So I was just going to recount the first time I ever heard my voice played back to me on a recording device, because it, to me, was a somewhat momentous occasion. And to be sitting here with a recording device in my hand right now... It just baffles me a little bit. Like, I do find it somewhat mind-blowing. It's such a simple thing, and so many people do it, and they wouldn't think twice about it these days. Sit down and record their thoughts on an audio device. So anyway, yeah, that's the context. The actual event, I was in a primary school classroom, and there was a Macintosh in the corner, an Apple Macintosh, and it was the first time, I think, that I'd been in a classroom that had a computer. And it sat in the corner, and occasionally we took turns to... do stuff with the computer, and that was a part of our education. One day my teacher recorded me saying a very short sentence and told me I'd just been immortalized, and that stuck with me for a long, long time. Like, it still is with me to an extent. This machine was able to immortalize me in a sense. There is a small piece of me, a snippet of me, recorded on that computer, which is now no doubt on the bottom of a trash heap somewhere, or, you know, has since been reduced down to recycled parts. That's me being optimistic there. But, yeah, it's interesting that I was immortalized, and now I'm sitting here, and, yeah, it still spins me out a bit that this is going down forever. Possibly forever.
Forever? Obligatory, yeah. Oh, yeah, immortalized. Don't know. But what did you say? What did you say in that recording?
I can't remember. I could have a stab, but I'd be making it up.
Okay. But you'd been immortalized. I don't know. Hadn't really thought about it in those terms. Immortalized. I guess so. To me, it's just like this idea that you've captured this thing that would naturally just disappear into the ether. And it's there for, you know, not like forever immortalized, but any time that you want to hear it again, you can hear it again. And that's interesting. It captures, like, you know, it's like if you could sort of, like, this is what all art seeks to do, I guess. I was going to say, if you could paint a picture of a wave, you know, if you could capture a wave breaking. You can't do that, of course, except you can. You could sort of shoot a video of it, but you can't really capture it. But you can. There's the capacity to do that now. The technology exists, which is kind of miraculous. But immortalized. To me, that suggests you have a fear of death, Twillin. Do you fear death? My sculptor teacher, Paul Quinn, asked us this in class the other day. Do you have a fear of death? Because this is a common theme throughout art, and very significant force in people's lives is death. Do we fear it? And the natural answer is yes. People are fucking shit to hell terrified of it, which seems to be the norm. But... most people in the class said no. I said no. And he also said no.
So I'd argue that I don't necessarily have a fear of death. It's not a state that I would find myself constantly in. Like, most of my life I live fairly fearlessly, even. On a lesser scale. Like, there's not a lot of fear of death in my day-to-day activities.
Death but it is could be argued, like, to avoid. Certainly Freudians would argue that, you know, not that I necessarily credence them, but the fear of death is behind almost everything that we do. All the time you're making... ways to stave off
avoid death.
Yeah, and you talked about being immortalized, like I'll be there even though I'm going to die.
Well, this brings us back to cunt, really.
The word cunt, we were talking about this while it was off. Yeah.
In a roundabout way, this does bring us back to that. Okay, I better explain.
But worst
the
word, can't say that word.
Yeah, it's a horrible word, cunt. It's a terrible word. But why does it have
I
so
like
much
it.
Power?
I'm a fan of it. Why does it have so much power? I think we all know
the,
why.
The most powerful word in our language in some contexts,
in
a lot
about?
Of ways. Well, it's about the fact that it represents the, for a male point of view, granted, but it represents the ultimate goal, the ultimate endeavour, which is to breed, to live forever, to immortalise yourself. That is the golden gate that you need to pass through. To immortalise yourself.
See, I think that's a very individualistic way of looking at it.
It is, absolutely.
It doesn't deal with my theme of the evening at all. I do think, like, the
point
you're
making... popular culture, though, the reason why it has so much weight in popular culture is because that's the common goal.
The come and go. Well,
is to immortalize themselves.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, and that's all about ego, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And that's one frame of reference or one way of looking at it. But you can see it's not to say it's about immortalization is to take a very personal viewpoint. It could just be said that it's about the continuation of the species, collectively the species continuing. And it's not really about, you know, we'd look at it from the point of view of ourselves and go, we want to be immortal and we're not. But more it's just like the species wants to be immortal, and so it finds ways to encapsulate this. But anyway, this brings me very nicely, actually, and I'm pleased, to this passage from a parenting manual that Justin has, called Raising Boys. Boys are great. Here's how to help them turn out well. And there's this bit about the links between sex and aggression. And I thought this is incredibly funny and I wanted to read it out, and it's perfectly, we've been brought to it. There is some support from primate studies for the idea that males with more power have higher sex drives, whatever the fuck that means. Men in sports teams that win have a higher testosterone level after the game than those who lose. And according to historians, many great leaders, President Kennedy, for instance, had very high sex drives to a degree that was really rather tragic and disabling. It's kind of hard to run a country when you want to keep racing off to have sex all the time. One study of juvenile delinquency in the 1980s found an intriguing connection that boys were several times more likely to get into trouble with the police in the 6 months before their first sexual experience. In other words, they calmed down a bit once they started having sex. Surprising discovery. Since all boys masturbate at this age, it can't just have been the release of sexual frustration. But perhaps the boys felt they had, quote, joined the human race, unquote, when they found a real-life lover. We don't recommend this as a cure for crime, but it makes sense. Wilhelm Reich would be with them on this one. It's sort of stopped being funny now.
It doesn't really quote Wilhelm Reich.
But it was funny as hell to me earlier.
That's a good addition, though. That's a good addition.
Indeed. Fair point. That's a lousy punchline. We've got to be able to finish this off some better.
I think Wilhelm Reich's an excellent punchline.
We'll finish with, we'll just say Wilhelm Reich.
Yeah.
Yeah, look him up. Google Wilhelm Reich. Anyone who's listening at this point, which will be no one.
Will be me and you.
This is the running theme in the audio lately. I always end on the note of like, nobody listens to the audio anyway.
It's a good thing to bear in mind.
Good thing to bear in mind. You're not listening to this, so it doesn't matter.
That was fun.